Good morning. What a day in the world. It's been a dreary week. Okay. Well, there's another really relatable thing about Jonah. And I think it's that his story reminds us that when we are in crisis, it is easy to forget everything that we know to be true. We might like fight, flight, freeze, but like our upper brain function is like offline. And we're human, so there's no like limit to the creative ways that we can get up to our neck, right? Threatened to drown and going down fast. And sometimes we don't even have to be like actually drowning to feel that way. Because anxiety can make you feel like you're drowning even if you're totally fine and nothing is actually wrong. And, you know, I think everyone experiences some level of this, but in our house, we have mild to moderate levels of anxiety. You know, some of it's kind of funny, like on Friday night when Caleb was making pizza and he opened a jar of pizza sauce, and it didn't quite smell as fresh as the last jar. And he got to be worried that it was an old jar that had gotten put on the grocery store shelf, but it was actually like expired. But he looked at the date, but it was kind of rubbed out, and you couldn't tell if it said 2023 or 2025. So he comes over to consult with me about whether or not it smelled fresh, which I thought it did, and what the date was. And really, this is all my fault, because a couple years ago, I was getting concerned with the quantity and level of expired food that Caleb was consuming, and told him about botulism. And since then, he's had quite a bit of anxiety about jarred produce. Could it be botulism? I don't think. I determined that it wasn't probably botulism, that it wasn't expired, because our last jar had the exact same like month and day expiration date, so I'm sure it was like the same batch, which was ironically Caleb's birthday, so I don't know what that means. But yeah, so there's that stuff, and then there's like, you know, I have a mild to moderate health anxiety at certain times. It kind of picks and chooses when I feel anxious about different things, but sometimes I can just, you know, have the most minor thing, and I'm like, I am dying, you know. This is the first sign of death. And I just think of how often I get to worrying about something and totally forget everything that's like logical about this. Like, logic says this plus this does not equal death, right? But it's hard to believe that. It's like worry doesn't allow a whole-brained response, but it thrives on like partial logic and sort of like frantic fear. One of my children has anxiety at night on occasion, only at night. And so I've tried to teach her that, you know, the reason that this happens at night and not during the day is because, you know, her logical brain goes to sleep before her creative brain. And I don't know if this is scientific, but I got it from the whole brain child, so somewhere there's science in there. And because of this, she can concoct all these different kind of scary outcomes that she would never even entertain during the day. And one night, a couple of weeks ago, after watching kind of a movie with kind of some scary moments in it, she was having trouble replaying these scenes in her mind as she was trying to go to sleep at bedtime. And so I said to her, like, turn on your logical brain. What does your logical brain say about this? And she just responded instantly. I'm not sure if it was a win or a loss in the parenting department, but she just responded, I can't, Mom. My logical brain is asleep. I'm like, okay. Anxiety doesn't approve of logic. And even though anxiety can manifest as a feeling in the body and often does, anxiety is actually a thought originating in the brain. It's like imagination and creativity that's fueled by experience and often fear. And it deals in future realms, not in present ones, which is why eating something cold or walking outside in the winter when you're feeling anxious can help bring you back into your body. It's like grounding in a way to come back into the present experienced bodily sensation. Because anxiety is a little bit of an out-of-body experience, kind of like death. Or at least, death is the experience of leaving the body, because the dead do not feel or think or remember or have anxiety, except for Jonah, who does. Jonah, who in the midst of death and dying, does something really radical when he finally connects his brain and his body and integrates them. With Jonah, his death is experienced in the body, which is a little bit strange. And it is described in great detail in Jonah's psalm in chapter 2, which we haven't read yet. So who's my reader for that? David is. David, why don't you come read that for us? I just realized we haven't read that. Come on up. So the metaphors used in this psalm, which is kind of an interruptive psalm right there in the middle of the book, have these vivid pictures of death itself. It's up to the neck, which is has a double meaning, because in Hebrew this word nefesh also means your life force. So it's your neck, but it's kind of like, you know, if you were just, you know, it's your life force. So the waters are up to your neck, up to your life. Death in Jonah is hurled and swirled. It's swept and surrounded and seaweeded. It's impregnated in Sheol and imprisoned in the earth. The language used reminds me of what I think it must feel like to disapparate, right? It's like you're out of your body for a moment, but you kind of feel everything. If, I suppose, when you apparate, you have seaweed wrapped around your head. It's kind of like the image that comes to mind. And as I said last week, the literal Hebrew language paints this picture of the womb of death. The womb of death. In the ancient Near East, the dead reside in a place called Sheol. And there really isn't this like idea of the afterlife, kind of like we have it. But Sheol was where you went when you ceased to be alive. Sheol is located under the earth. Sometimes when metaphors are used, it's at the roots of the mountains, or it's in the sea. So you see these themes in Jonah. The ocean, which is this means of death for Jonah, takes on this sort of diabolical personhood in his poetry. God sends Jonah down and makes him rise. But the means of his death are these chaotic waters. Water, which is essential to life, when unchecked, becomes this perpetrator of death. Water, that which you cannot live without but for a few days, kills you if there is too much in a few seconds or minutes. Water is this kind of life and death metaphor. It is within the seas of Sheol, the realm, that the realm of the dead is often located. It is the one place in the world where one might even say that God's presence cannot reach. There are several psalms that seem to indicate this theological belief that God's presence cannot reach into the realm of the dead. For example, Psalm 116 says, "Do not abandon me to Sheol." meaning that if there is anywhere God is not, it is perhaps in this realm of the dead. And in Jonah's story, even when Jonah seems to be drowning, God never is sort of out of control of the situation. It's a very much behind-the-scenes picture of God's control. God sends Jonah overboard in his psalm, and in the end of the reading today, God makes the fish vomit Jonah up. Whether or not Jonah is actually dead as he resides in the womb of Sheol is hard to say. It's kind of like, can you compose poetry when you're dead? Can you remember it? Can you remember your God in your death? Can you offer thanksgiving, hope, pray prayers, make vows? And yet Jonah does all of these things as he waits in the womb of death herself. I say herself because it's interesting that the gender of the noun used for the fish at the beginning when the fish is introduced is a masculine form of this word for fish. But in verse 1, when Jonah begins to pray, the word actually changes. And it becomes, when he says, from the belly of the fish, this time the fish is feminine, a feminine word for fish. And then it just changes right back at the very end when God commands the fish to vomit Jonah back out. So it's like male, female, male again. One theologian has even suggested that God changed the gender of the fish while Jonah was inside it, because Jonah was too comfortable inside a masculine body, which I thought was really interesting. But what happens to him in this water grave in the womb of Sheol? There's very much strong female imagery here. Well, at least say it that way. You could possibly interpret it the womb of the fish as well. Hidden away after those 3 days and nights, we don't really know what happens. We just get this small glimpse of what transpires for Jonah. In that desensitization chamber, it seems like some things have finally become clear. It is paradoxical that he is in his body, and he is also inside of death. And the main thrust of Jonah's words in the fish is this growing awareness of God's presence with him, which is crazy, because as his psalm talks about, God's presence resides in the temple. The temple at the top of this great height. God's presence is known to the people through Moses, who met God at the top of a mountain. And today is Transfiguration Sunday, and Jesus encounters this presence at this on this other mount of transfiguration. God's presence is known to be on these sort of high, tall heights. There is some kind of perspective of God's presence on these precipices. But in Jonah's watery grave, the psalm says that God's presence was there too. God calls Jonah to rise, and Jonah goes down, down, down. And the theme from chapter 1 doesn't let up in chapter 2. The fish finally swallows Jonah down, only to vomit him up 3 days later. And all this down and up is playing a role in the narrative. No matter if Jonah is down or up, God's presence is there. No matter if we are down or up, God's presence is here. When God's call came to Jonah, he acted out of anxiety. Fight, flight, freeze. He first flighted. He ran away. Later, he fought with God. And in the middle of the storm on the sea, when the sailors told him, "Get up. Pray on to your God," Jonah froze, did nothing. But once he was thrown overboard, once the waters were up to his neck, he suddenly remembered. He remembered God. He says, "As my life was ebbing away, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came to you into your holy temple." The genre of the psalm that Jonah prays in Jonah doesn't really match his circumstance. It's arguably like an inappropriate psalm. To sing a song of thanksgiving in the clutches of death doesn't really make sense. Perhaps if it would have been a lament, it would have fit better. But a song of thanksgiving. He says, "But I with the voice of thanksgiving will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed I will pay. Deliverance belongs to Yahweh, to the Lord." But at the time of this psalm in the storyline, deliverance has not happened. It's kind of funny. It doesn't fit in multiple ways. The flood has washed over Jonah, and he is imprisoned in the earth. Commentators don't really know what to do with this. It's a little confusing. Did Jonah really write this psalm? Why is it stuck where it is? I have a theory that maybe he wrote it after the fact in reflection, but that is not at all substantiated. We don't really know. You know, there's multiple treatments for physical conditions, physical ailments that do the very opposite of what makes sense. So I'm participating in one such treatment right now. It's called immunotherapy. And every day I ingest 3 drops of a concentrated form of the things I am most allergic to. And the goal here is to overexpose my body to the allergens in order to desensitize my body from these things that aren't actually hurting me, but I'm reacting to all the time regardless. In doing so, hopefully it's going to make me stop reacting to allergens in the physical environment because I've been so overexposed artificially so that my body realizes that these things aren't harming me. But I was reading on this website about another treatment this week that's actually called flooding, which I thought fit thematically. And it's used in certain circumstances to treat anxiety. A therapist will flood a person with vast amounts of a feared stimulus, and it's expected that the patient would initially be very anxious, but it's hoped that the anxiety would decrease after repeated exposures. In the flood, in the womb of death, with seaweed wrapping around your head, it's hard to remember and to use your whole brain. It's easy to forget and to everything that you know and you believe, to add what you know to be true to your worst fear and hold those two in balance takes practice. To become whole-brained and whole-bodied is ironically something that seems to occur in Jonah in the belly of the fish more than any other point in his entire saga. Jonah is supposedly this prophet, or at least an Israelite, who's supposed to be in devotion to God, and we've already seen his faith. But in the belly of the fish, he actually acts like one. Wholeness, Jonah seems to discover in melodic fashion at the bottom of the ocean, is achieved when you remember that God is present, not when you are just up at the top of the mountain, but when you are also down in the lowest possible place. God isn't necessarily some kind of genie when you're stuck in the cave of wonders, ready to get you out. But as Jonah said, deliverance does belong to the Lord after all. And because everything happens and because our lives aren't stories being told like Jonah is, we can't always say in clarity, with clarity, we don't always know why things happen. Who is at fault in the situation in which we find ourselves up to our neck. And we don't always know if something's in our head or in our body or just us imagining the worst possible scenario. But I would venture to guess that we have all spent some time in an illogical and anxious space that I might call the womb of Sheol or even the belly of the beast. Or maybe it felt like the waters closed in over you, where you were flooded, anxiety up, and hands down the lowest of low places. When your sense of direction is out of whack, when you're going down or when you hit rock bottom, that is the place that I want us to reflect on for the next little bit until the kids arrive. I have some art supplies on your table, and I would invite you to take whatever posture is comfortable if you want to spread out or find your own space. And I'd love it if we'd spend the next 10 or 12 minutes to take some time to just create our own response. In the genre of the scripture today, you could write a psalm, a poem, a prayer. You could create a picture. But I want you to think specifically about some low place for you. I'd love for us to spend time practicing what God's presence looks like in those places through responding creatively like Jonah did. I feel strongly that if we practice becoming aware of God's presence in hard times, it will be increasingly easier to do so. And I've also just got to say that the word picture of the womb of Sheol just demands some creative imagination. So, for the next few minutes, let's pray, paint, and respond in creative fashion to the Psalm of Jonah.